good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to KTVO News in Juneau here on Thursday. This is December 8th, the year 2011. Jeff Grant will be here today on a Juneau afternoon. We'll talk with Gustavus author Hank Lanfer about his new book, Faith of Cranes, prior to his presentation tonight for Fed Books in the Nugget Mall at 6:30. Jeremy Johnson will be here to talk about Sunday's casual game day. Candace Winkler and Travis Gilmore will be here to highlight the Alaska Community Foundation. And Nancy DeTrini will be here to give us the rundown on arts happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. At Writer's Almanac, Music and More today on a Juneau afternoon. But the forecast for tonight looks like rain, and the forecast for Friday looks like more rain, and the forecast for Friday night, cloudy skies and a chance of rain.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Erosion and flooding are threatening several Alaska Native villages. For the 400 people of Nutok, the millions of dollars to relocate has not been reached. But as KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports, they're making progress in a site 9 miles away.
In southwest Alaska, the Yupik Eskimo village of Nutok has lost hundreds of feet of land to the Ningaluk River and is predicted to be a complete loss within the next 5 to 10 years. Years of negotiations paid off when, in 2006, the Nutok Village Corporation was able to trade land with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for a new village site 9 miles away. Now Stanley Tom of the Native Village of Nutok says he'll have 6 houses ready to live in this summer.
My plan is to finish these houses and start doing a pioneering. And pioneering means living without any water, sewer, no facilities, just live in the old ways. And these houses have wood stoves in them. So these super insulated housing should be really warm.
Federal and state agencies, nonprofit organizations, and the military donated funds and labor to build a road, evacuation center, and a barge landing essential for the delivery of supplies at the new site. Agencies are working on plans for energy and sanitation systems, an airport, and other infrastructure. In northwest Alaska, the villages of Kivalina and Shishmaref are also at risk due to erosion. Shishmaref is selecting a relocation site. Kivalina is working to get an evacuation center built. Reporting in Anchorage, Alaska, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
In the heart of Seattle's downtown, the Chief Seattle Club is working to help homeless Native Americans. Eilish O'Neill has more.
The club has 2 arms, a whole host of services that homeless Native Americans might need, and an art studio where they can create drawings, paintings, dream catchers, and jewelry. Patricia St. Marks is a member of the Chippewa Cree tribe of Montana. She comes to the Chief Seattle Club 3 or 4 times a week to crochet scarves and hats and blankets in the art studio.
I used to just isolate, stay in. I had something that traumatized me and I was scared to go out. And I just came down to just look around one day and I met Olive. She gave me a needle and some yarn and I've been coming ever since. It's my social time. Sometimes we don't come in such a good mood and stuff, but we all leave with a smile.
Executive Director Janine Gray of the Tlingit tribe says that many members have used club resources to turn their lives around. She tells the story of one young woman.
She was so pleasant, very, very friendly, but many of the times she was totally intoxicated or totally high. You know, we would assist her, with clothes and basic needs, showers and different things. And one day she showed me a picture of this little baby boy, cutest baby I've ever seen, perfect little round head, just adorable.
That baby was her baby. Child Protective Services took him away from her because she couldn't stay sober. Later, she got pregnant again, and she turned to the club for help.
And so we connected her to some drug and alcohol programs and just some more basic assistance and emergency assistance. We assisted her with some rental help. Lo and behold, she had her baby, healthy baby boy.
Gray says that this young woman is now completely sober and she has a job and a home. She still comes to the club regularly. In fact, only 55% of club members are homeless, while the rest come for cultural events and for the sense of community. For National Native News, I'm Alicia O'Neill in Seattle, Washington.
On this day in 2010, President Obama signed the $3.4 billion Cobalt Settlement into law to address the federal government's mismanagement of individual Indian trust accounts. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you can get free legal help with filing a claim at meetings held around the country through December. Details and a schedule of meetings is at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTVO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is Hank Lanford, a Gustavus author. He's doing a presentation and book signing tonight at Tarside Books from 6:30 until 8 p.m. Hank has written a book called Faith of Cranes. Hank, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me in, Jeff.
First question, what does Faith of Cranes mean?
Well, when I was watching my wife's belly grow with our daughter and thinking about what was going on in there, and that creature growing in there was not, I was guessing, very worried about the future at all. It was just doing its thing, getting bigger, ready to come into this world. And cranes, as I watched them migrate over my house in Gustavus, seem to be pulled by a similar force. They're just moving through the world, just drawn almost just by the force of life. And as I was contemplating those cranes and watching my wife swell, I was reflecting that I, in contrast to those creatures, had a lot of fretting for the future. And I kind of envied that faith of the cranes and that force that was pulling that fetus into the world.
Your book tells several stories, your personal stories, through a few shorter glimpses of friends and those who inspired you, and you connect them all with sandhill cranes. What's your connection with cranes?
Well, it's one of the many great fortunes in my life that I have these guys migrating over my house. And I built a home in Gustavus when I was 25, and it was literally while I was nailing the last few boards onto the roof of that little house, and it was fall time, and these cranes flew overhead. And anybody who's been fortunate enough to be underneath this sound knows it, because it will completely capture you. So it was one of the many beautiful things about where I ended up settling, and I didn't know it at the time, but I've been there for a couple decades now, and that rhythm of those birds coming through every fall is just a rich part of life in Gustavus.
And what do cranes signify to your daughter now, 8 years old?
Oh, she loves them. It's in the spring when they first come back, and the light's coming back after the winter, and whether it's my daughter or my wife or me is the first ones to hear those birds. There's always a big holler in our house. And if you're outside, you got to run back in and get the rest of the family. And we all go out in the meadow and watch those birds come over. So in the spring, it's like it's almost like color coming back into a black and white world to have the sound of those birds fill up the sky in the spring.
And you connect your concern with the birds with the idea that they may not be around when your daughter is your age.
Yeah, I worry about a lot of things that may not be around when my daughter's my age. You know, a lot of the information is just simply not good. This the reality of feeding an estimated 10 billion people by the time my daughter's my age. Prediction of pretty widespread drought in the continental U.S. where the cranes spend the winter and a lot of other things spend the winter. Because of climate change. So there's a lot of trends that don't point to a great future.
Is that why you wrote the book?
Well, in part. It was my kind of relationship to the information and the fact that I had allowed my fretting of a potentially stressful, ugly future rob me from my ability to really revel and enjoy the beauty that was all around me. So I gave myself the homework assignment to kind of pull back my focus from the future and bring it more into the present. And the book kind of chronicles that homework assignment.
How were you able to weave the stories together?
Well, you focus on anything for a decade, and you can eventually get it put together. It took me a long time, and writing was one of the most humbling things I ever set out to do. When I first said, hey, I'm going to write a book, I figured I know the alphabet like everybody else. I'll just sit down and write a book. And it was not that easy. You know, I thought I was done. I wrote the last sentence of this book a week before my daughter was born. That was 8 years ago, and it's been through a lot of drafts since then.
You wrote about reconciling the conflicting feelings about a growing estate within your participation in the process.
Yeah, there's the same forces that pioneered the entire continent, that the push west and the tendency to always change our towns into cities in the name of convenience and ease and comfort, those forces are still alive and well, and they are transforming Gustavus. And I both resist those trends, and I also benefit from them. I resisted the road being paved, but I really enjoy not breathing dust in Gustavus. I'm still trying to reconcile my participation in a pattern that the end result is a loss of a lot of wild country.
One of my favorite parts in the book is where you talk about people driving along the road and just stopping to giga and talk a little while.
Yeah, it was an amazing thing back when the Gustavus Road was still dirt, and you really couldn't go from home to the post office without bumping into a couple cars pulled up and elbows sticking out the windows chatting. And more often than not, you couldn't get around, so you just shut the car off and walk up and join the conversation. And that all stopped really quickly after pavement. So it was pretty interesting. We could still do it, but just that smooth surface made that characteristic go away from town.
Like we said earlier, your book consists of a number of different stories. What do you think is the most important story your book tells?
Well, what I hope people really take away is a focus on how beautiful the world is now, and regardless of what the future brings, that there will always be opportunities for grace, compassion, kindness, and if that's true, then there's not that much to worry about in the future. And our work now in preparing for whatever future's coming is just to increase our capacity to respond to any situation we can imagine with those positive human qualities.
One of the most moving chapters, and I didn't think it would hit me so hard until I reread it, was your open letter to your unborn child.
Yeah, and the decision to become a father, amazingly enough, it was a tough one. I was reluctant to go there. And I say it was a tough one. And looking back, it's hard to imagine because it's one of the best decisions of my life now. But I had to do quite a bit of searching before I came to that decision. So I took some time and went in the woods by myself for a while and came up with that letter to my daughter. And that was my way of working through some of my concerns.
A lot of the book takes place on Limashir Island. You want to talk about the island for a little bit?
Yeah, it's just a gorgeous place, and it's a very quiet, low-key place, especially in winter, which is when we spend most of our time there. So it's just steeped in wildness, and it's yet another very fortunate aspect of our lives that we have access to that place and get to go and just be quiet, and it also feeds us, which is another great gift.
Dr. Hank Lamper, he's the author of the book Faith of Cranes. He's having a presentation of book signings tonight at 6:30 until 8 p.m. at the Valley location of Outside Books. What's happening at the book signing tonight, other than you signing lots and lots of books?
Well, I'm going to I was just working on what sections of the book I'm going to read. I've been thinking about that this morning, and I'm going to focus on the power of the landscape in Southeast Alaska to bring communities tightly together. And I kind of have this theory that the larger the landscape looms and the smaller the community, the tighter that bond is. So I want to tell a few stories that explore that.
That's a great book. I enjoyed reading the whole thing, even though I had to reread several sections twice.
Well, great. Glad you enjoyed it, Jeff.
Think anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I think that covers it.
All right, well, thank you for coming by the station today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Hank Lenfer will be signing books, copies of his book, Faith of Cranes, tonight at 6:30 until 8 p.m. at the Valley location of Outside Books.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 8th of December, 2011. It's the birthday of the poet Horace, born in Apulia, Italy, 65 B.C., most famous for his odes in which he wrote about spring and a farm owned by a friend and old age and the empire. Many people have tried to translate the odes, John Milton, Wordsworth, Longfellow, Robert Lowell, John Quincy Adams. Heather McHugh translated one ode, Get Wise, Get Wine, and One Good Filter for It. Cut that high hope down to size and pour it into something fit for men. Think less of more tomorrows, more of this 1 second. Endlessly unique, it's jealous, even as we speak, and it's about to split again. Horace, who gave us the phrase, Carpe diem, seize the day. It's the birthday of the poet James Tate, Kansas City, 1943. It's the birthday of Bill Bryson, Des Moines, 1951, who, after writing many travel books, promised his wife he would write a book from home, and he wrote a book about home, entitled At Home, A Short History of Private Life. It's the birthday of James Thurber, Columbus, Ohio, 1894, dropped out of Ohio State University, moved to New York, met E.B. White in 1927, who helped him get a job at the New Yorker. And it was White who persuaded Thurber that his drawings and cartoons were good. They collaborated on a book, Is Sex Necessary, in 1929. James Thurber, who said, humor is emotional chaos remembered in tranquility. It's the birthday of the Welsh novelist Richard Llewellyn, born in a suburb of London, 1906. Wrote 24 novels, most famous for the first one, How Green Was My Valley, the story of Hugh Morgan, young man growing up in a very poor mining community in South Wales in the 1890s. It's the birthday of the novelist Mary Gordon, born Far Rockaway, New York, 1949, grew up in a Catholic household, for a time wanted to be a nun, but went to Barnard, got a master's in writing, went to work on a Ph.D. on Virginia Woolf. She was almost finished with it, but felt like it was getting in the way of her own fiction writing, and reading Woolf made her want to write her own work, so she did. Final Payments, The Company of Women, Temporary Shelter, and most recently, The Love of My Youth. And it's the birthday of Eli Whitney, born Westboro, Massachusetts, 1765, who invented the cotton gin, which saved people from the tedious business of separating cotton seeds from fibers. It took 10 hours to clean 3 pounds of cotton. The cotton gin could do 50 pounds a day. Here's a poem for today by James Tate, a poem entitled Flight, for Kay. Like a glum cricket, the refrigerator is singing, and just as I am convinced that it is the only noise in the building, a pot falls in 2B. The neighbors, on both sides of me, suddenly realize that they have not made love to their wives since 1947. The racket multiplies. The man down hall is teaching his dog to fly. The fish are disgusted and beat their heads blue against a cold aquarium. I, too, lose control, and consider the dust huddled in the corner a threat to my endurance. Were you here, we would not tolerate mongrels in the air, nor the conspiracies of dust. We would drive all night, your head tilted on my shoulder. At dawn, I would nudge you with my anxious fingers and say, already we are in Idaho. A poem by James Tate, Flight, from his Selected Poems, published by Wesleyan University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly Editor's Podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:20 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a June afternoon. Reminder that Bob Armstrong is giving a photography presentation at the University of Alaska Southeast on tonight at 7 p.m. The lecture is sponsored by the Juneau Audubon Society and will be in the Egan Lecture Hall. The studio that now with me here is Jeremy Johnson here to talk about Casual Game Day coming up this Sunday from 1 to 8 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Jeremy, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
So first of all, what is a gamer?
A gamer would represent anyone that plays any kind of game, I suppose. But my particular market is the niche market of tabletop games, and maybe in the future there'll be something else, but for right now we're focusing on tabletop games.
And I'm assuming the tabletop games are played on top of a table.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's various different kinds. For instance, you know, you've played maybe Monopoly or something like that. That's clearly a tabletop game. You know, it's a different sort of game. The kind of games that I'm focusing in on are strategic games, usually. Something that involves the element of taking either units in mass and placing them on a tabletop in a presentation of a similar thing to a combat mock-up something like a role-playing game where you have everybody taking on a character for the day or for a while.
About how many gamers do you think are in Juneau?
I'm estimating around maybe 400 or 500 altogether, you know, spanning multiple age groups. Like maybe my friend who's, I think he's 60 now, he plays in our gaming group, and I've got a member who I think is 19 in our same gaming group. So we really span the range.
What are the most popular games that are played here in Juneau that you're aware of?
Oh, the ones I'm most aware of are Games Workshop games. They're like Warhammer 40K. That's the one where you have big armies. Dungeons and Dragons, I know some people that play with the 4th edition version. Other D20 games like Pathfinder and maybe a couple GURPS players. That's generic universal role-playing system, GURPS. And then I know that there's also some what we call White Wolf gamers out there. They play things like Exalted, Vampire the Masquerade, and things along those lines. Other sorts of tabletop games involve, there's a few people that play real war strategy games that are basically like air pilots, you know, doing a large versus with lots of air combat, you know, like planes and helicopters and things of that nature. And then you can have genres based on what era of war you want to represent, like the Korean War or World War II. There's even a musket-based warring set that you can have. It's really, you know.
It's grown a lot since the Monopoly game that I used to play when I was growing up.
Yeah, there's lots of room.
What's the evolution of today's gaming industry?
Well, originally there was a fellow by the name of Gary Gygax. He invented a thing called Dungeons and Dragons. And then they started a company, Tactical Strategic Resources, I think, which is TSR. And then it was founded a thing called Judges Guild. And then from that, they evolved further tactical games. You know, at the same time, you've got like Milton Bradley and, you know, those sorts of games still producing things like Risk and, you know, the Stones-based games like Othello and stuff like that. But at the same, the counterpart of that is the more evolved combat strategy game. And then a company called Wizards of the Coast bought TSR, and now they own the rights to, you know, D&D and all that stuff. White Wolf is owned by a different group, and they're their own company. It's basically about five companies out there that are the big guns for the tabletop gaming.
How has the internet affected all the gaming industries?
Oh, the internet has played a really interesting role. In the beginning, it would be maybe text-based games that came out where people were describing rooms and then describing interactions with other players, just very simply. But then it became command-oriented. But now they'll have an evolved bulletin board system. For instance, I know one fellow, Fred, that actually has a diorama representation. He'll take a picture of an awesome scene, and he'll be working through a bulletin board system with his gaming group that does a day-by-day turns or something like that, you know, and minor events like that. And then, you know, there's also the massive multiplayer online role-playing games that evolved directly from other role-playing games. Things like World of Warcraft, ElfQuest. I can't not mention Skyrim, even though it's one player, I suppose, you know. But, you know, the Internet has really allowed people to remain in contact, you know, to have access to resources that we just didn't have before, especially with the release of the open gaming license for the D20 system. They basically said, all these books that are in print now, we don't mind you using all the rules from it, and so they just released it for free. So now anybody can start their own at-home game, even with their kids and the parents. I know one group of gamers that was just an in-house gamer group, and they played D&D 4th edition because it's got more clear-cut rules, easier for kids to adapt to.
Now, for some of my listeners who aren't aware of Dungeons & Dragons, can you briefly go over it, please?
Oh, sure. It's more quest and hero-based. So you'll be able to create your own little character based on a set of rules. You know, everybody has a certain numerical value for certain statistics, things like how strong you are, how dexterous you are, how smart you are, things like that. And then you get to pick kind of like what the heroic career of your character was. Like, oh, I was a wizard, I cast spells, or, you know, I choose to be a barbarian, I can't read, and, you know, can swing an axe or something like that. Then everybody gets together and they interact with a game master or a dungeon master, and that person is representative of the world at large, so to speak. So if the characters, you know, they need to do some mundane shopping to go get some healing potions or something, the DM represents that other character, and then they can have that interaction. And then if the world at large has some terrible doer of terrible deeds, you know, say a necromancer lord who is raising zombies to attack the masses or something along those lines, then the heroes of the story, the actual characters, get to go out and you know, go through the trials of solving the mystery of who the fellow is, of combating these minions at large, you know, and then finally, of course, facing the nemesis. Almost every time there's a nemesis, you know.
Sounds like it pays to have a good imagination.
Oh, yeah, it really does.
I'm talking with Jeremy Johnson, one of the Juno Gamers, who's in doing organizing Casual Game Day this Sunday from 1 to 8 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Is gaming expensive?
Well, it's a hobby thing. You know, it depends on how involved you want to be. The fellow I mentioned that does the dioramas, you know, he invests time building those things and in some cases buying the elements of it. I myself have invested more in the books, the core rules and that sort of thing. But once it became more of an open source behavior, it was a lot easier for people to game. So you could really have a totally free game. Or you could go out there and invest in the hobby and make it more of a personal experience, you know. Like, we like to use a battle map to where we roll out this big grid so we can put little miniatures on the board to show where we are inside of a room or inside of a large building or even outside in a road or something. You just take a dry erase marker and bust out with a couple paths and maybe draw some rocks or something. But if you want something more elaborate, you could get like little trees that you can place out there. I really like the deciduous trees because they're very colorful and that kind of thing, you know. I mean, it's basically modeling for your fellows, you know, whoever you are playing the game with. It's always a fellowship almost every time of a group of people that come together and really enjoy each other's company. And then they spend, like, you know, hours together and then go home, you know. That's the basic mechanism for tabletop gaming.
And you're opening up a gaming store here in Juneau.
That's the goal. The goal is to open doors by 2014. And so over the next year, what we're doing is we're building awareness and opening monthly events at Centennial Hall. And so the first event is this Sunday. It's totally free. You can come and walk through. We'll have goods for purchase even, whether it's the scenery or the books or we've got lots of cool t-shirts, you know, like nerd gear, things like that. But, you know, it's totally free to walk through and stuff. But then if you want to join a table or sit down at a table, you know, pay $10 to help us get going. We'll even give you a $5 voucher for any goods that you find interesting. You know, my friend wanted me to make sure that I mentioned, my friend Will wanted me to make sure I mentioned the cool t-shirts because they're really from like Snorg Tees, those really funny ones like I like the one with a cactus on it that says hugs, and he's all savage, you know. I mean, you know, things like that. We got zombies, pirates, ninjas. I mean, we really kind of represent everybody.
All right, Jeremy Johnson here talking about Juno Gamers. In fact, their gaming day is this Sunday from 1 to 8 p.m. at Centennial Hall. If people need more information about the gaming industry here in Juno, want to contact you personally or just want to come down and get more information about Sunday's event, how can they do that?
Well, if they want more information in an immediate way, you can feel free to give me a call. I don't mind, 957-5368. And if you, want to check out the website, it's currently under construction. We'll be getting regular updates starting, I believe this weekend we're doing a new update. It's got some product on it. It's junogamers.com. And there's due to be an email set up by this weekend, info@junogamers.com. So it should all be pretty much readily available online by the end of the weekend.
All right, Jeremy Johnson, is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask? Other than t-shirts, t-shirts, t-shirts?
Yeah. Well, you know, there'll be a table for painting, because, you know, miniature painting with the models and such is definitely part of the experience. In the future, we'll be doing workshops based around painting, and those will be quarterly. But there'll be a painting table open, you know. We have the Reaper Miniatures series of pro paints. They're a water-based acrylic, I believe, so that way they're water-soluble. You can dilute them with water, and they're less, you know, troublesome to deal with if you have to clean them, basically. And there'll be a table, an open table, where there'll be a master DM prepared to have some gamers add themselves to it. There'll be some open tables if people want to set up their own impromptu game right there. They just want to come and hang out with everybody else. There's even going to be a war table set up for anyone that likes the Games Workshop or the big combat tables, you know. I think that's pretty much the coolest part is that we're trying to bring the fellowship of gamers together.
All right, Jeremy Johnson, good luck with your games.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
are tuned to KTUO News in Juno, a little bit of music from Pearl Django. In studio with us now to talk about the Alaska Community Foundation in Town Square 49 is Travis Gilmore and Candace Winkler here. Thank you very much for coming to the station, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So Candace, can you tell us first what the Alaska Community Foundation is?
Sure. The Alaska Community Foundation, we're a statewide nonprofit that's focused on growing philanthropy and building community.
And how is that related to the one here in Juneau?
We work really closely with the one here in Juneau. They are our partner, and they serve locally the Juneau community, and they have a fund with us at the Alaska Community Foundation. So we do a lot of work back and forth.
I guess more important than what the Alaska Community Foundation is, who the Alaska Community Foundation is.
Who the Community Foundation
mm-hmm.
is? The Community Foundation is a group of people from around the state who are interested in growing kind of permanent philanthropic assets that help improve the quality of life throughout Alaska. So we provide grants throughout the state. This last year, we provided grants in 48 communities around the state, everything from supporting a refrigeration system down in Naknak to providing support to the Talkeetna Build-A-Plane project, where they're doing hands-on learning with youth in the community.
And where does the money come from?
The money comes from a lot of different places. It comes from individuals. It comes from corporations on occasion. We have some of our funds are set up to gather community philanthropy and to raise funds from lots of different people.
What's the philanthropic process?
It depends on the type of fund. We have some individuals who have the capacity to set up what we would call a donor-advised fund. And instead of setting up their own private foundation, like maybe the Rasmussen Foundation, for example, they may set up a donor-advised fund where the Alaska Community Foundation kind of owns and holds those assets, and the donor has the ability to make recommendations for those grants. So it's not nearly as intensive for the donor as setting up their own private foundation, but they still can have a real meaningful say in where those dollars go. We also have other funds that are set up by nonprofit organizations. For instance, Perseverance Theater has an agency endowment with us, and they're the only entity that would receive the proceeds or the grants from that fund. And then we have communities who will set them up. So we have five affiliate communities, Petersburg, Talkeetna, Haines, Kenai, and Seward. And that's the type of fund where lots of people in a community may give small amounts. I mean, you know, they may give gifts of $25 or, you know, much larger gifts of thousands of dollars to be able to save kind of a little mini permanent fund to fund the quality of life issues in their own community today and also in the future.
I'm talking with Candace Winkler and Travis Gilmore about the Alaska Community Foundation and something called the Town Square 49. Travis, you want to talk about the Town Square 49 process, please?
Sure. Town Square 49 is it's an online platform. It's part of our website. I work at the public media stations in Anchorage. KAKM is our television there. KSKA is our local K2 in Anchorage. And then the Alaska Public Radio Network, which, of course, you folks down here in Juneau know well about. So my role there is to really look at online community building and how we can help connect the state through the work that we're doing on our websites. So Town Square 49 is an opportunity for citizens, individuals out there, bloggers, people who are doing that kind of work, people who are photographers, videographers, that type of thing, and nonprofit organizations to just have a platform on our site and to be able to communicate what they're doing with the rest of Alaska.
So can you be more specific on how it works?
Well, it's a pretty simple process. People just get in contact with us, they go to the website townsquare49.org, and I recommend you do that because you can get a much better sense of what that looks like than listening to me talk. But go there and get in contact with us and let us know what you're interested in doing. So if you write, for example, or if you take pictures or if you do videos or if you have your already existing blog that you'd like to have us take and put on our site and share with more folks, then we go ahead and do that. And so there's links right there on the site that help people get in contact with us, and it's as simple as that.
What was the initial impetus for the project, and how long have you been working on it?
Well, Candace, actually, why don't you tell us a little bit about the relationship? Because the Community Foundation and the APTI relationship, I think, is an important dynamic to how that started.
Absolutely. So the Alaska Community Foundation received a grant from the Knight Foundation, which is a national funder, and they're interested in information needs of communities. And so for the past 5 years, they've been funding community foundations around the nation to really look at and try to address information needs. And the goal is to provide a venue where individuals can share what's happening in their communities, with the idea that when individuals know what's happening, they're much more likely to get engaged. They're much more likely to be involved in their communities, to be philanthropic. And, you know, the Community Foundation, you know, recognized that we clearly weren't experts in news and information, but, you know, we had a great partner in APTI. And so this has been a really great partnership between the two of us, where we're able to utilize our strengths.
I'm assuming that Town Square 49 represents Alaska. Is there some things similar ones for other states?
There are lots of different projects over the past 5 years that Knight has funded. Many of them have been online type sites similar to ours. Other communities have kind of gone in different directions to address the information needs. Travis, do you want to?
Yeah, a lot of the sites have been more hyper-local in focus, hyper-local being, you know, just your block or your community or just a place like Juneau. What we're trying to do is create a hub where folks from all over the state can sort of express what it means to be an Alaskan and what that means for them. So whether that's, you know, down here in Southeast or up on the North Slope or in South Central, we're just really interested in, that's why we have that tagline, Alaska Happens Here. We're interested to know what makes the Alaskan tick, what is happening in the Alaskan psyche, you know, what it means to be from this place.
And you're having an event tonight at the Rookery to talk more about it?
Yeah, that's right. We'll be at the Rookery after this show, starting about 4 o'clock until we have to go catch our plane at 6. So 4 to 6, we'll be at the Rookery having coffee with folks, hoping to meet some of the more interesting creative types that are out there. So if you're listening, we'd love to have you buy a cup of coffee and talk about what's happening here in Juneau.
No, I can't. I barely can blog to save my life. Does this require a technical knowledge or an experienced computer user?
No, and that's sort of one of the main things that we bring to the table is you know, I over the radio you can't see, but I'm wearing very thick glasses right now. I'm the nerd behind this thing. So, yeah, I do the technical piece, and we have that in-house to handle posting the content for people. Really what you'd need to know is whatever your expertise is, taking the picture or writing, you know, on your PC or computer or whatever that may be that you're used to using. And then you just email that stuff to us, and we get it out there.
You know, a lot of what we're trying to do is really encourage nonprofits to get involved and tell their story. And many of the staff and nonprofits are already creating, you know, newsletters and articles about the issues that they care about or the work they're doing. And we think that may have, you know, more appeal to a broader audience. And so a lot of the work is going to be work that is maybe repurposed and just extended to a broader audience. And I would also say that today with the advent of our smartphones, I mean, all of us can pretty simply take little video clips or quick photos, and some of those really are of interest to be shared on a site like Town Square 49. So some of the technology can be pretty simplistic.
Where do you see Town Square 49 in 5 years or 10 years?
Good question.
You know, I don't know, but my hope would be that it is truly a statewide initiative and that it's volunteer-driven. As something like this grows and as you look at sustainability, I think, thinking about something like Craigslist or thinking about something that is more organic and community-driven, where the content is coming from the community, folks are able to post it themselves, and there is a that sort of community-enforced sort of set of rules and way of operating that doesn't require heavy staffing, something that can be owned by the communities.
So people should go to the Rookery in the next few minutes if they're interested in taking part in Town Square 49. If they can't make it to the Rookery tonight, how can they get a hold of you to get more information and maybe log on and sign in?
Yeah, the simplest thing to remember is Town Square 49, the number's 49, like the 49th state, which, duh, you got that, .org, and just type that in and you can get in contact with us there. You can see what we're up to, what it looks like, feel, what's going on there.
All right, Travis Gilmore and Candace Winkler, thank you for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Just that, it's a really exciting opportunity to connect people from all across our state. I think that, as Travis mentioned, individuals really, I think, associate with being Alaskan. And while all of our communities have a lot of unique aspects and elements, it's really great to have a place where we really can better understand life around the state and better connect with other Alaskans.
All right, thank you for coming by the station.
Well, we really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
On K2 is supported in part by the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Time is 3:48, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juno. Behind us, the music of Dan Hobson. And in the studio with us is Nancy Dittrin, here to talk about art stuff going on. Nancy, thank you for coming down the station again.
Thanks for having me come across the street.
Not a problem, anytime.
It's awfully rainy out there, but it's going to get better, right?
That's
updating right. The weather to be a better. Okay, excellent. Well, we have a pretty exciting week, of course. It's all the holiday sorts of things. I'll start with the music, theater, and the arts that we have to choose from. If you have not seen The Christmas Carol yet at Perseverance Theater, you do need to do that. There, it's this week. It's 7:30 p.m. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it will run through Christmas Eve. The Christmas Eve performance will be a matinee. So you can get tickets at those online, at the Jack, at the bookstores, Hearthside, Downtown Valley. Also, tomorrow is the Kimball Organ Concert at the State Office Building, as usual, and Dan Hobson, and you're going to be meeting, having him on the station, I understand.
3:45 tomorrow afternoon.
He plays classical guitar in the Gold Room on the at the Baranoff Hotel at 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Also, we have the Nutcracker. This is Juno Dance Unlimited's annual wonderful performance. It is at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium, 7 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and there's a 2 p.m. Sunday performance as well. Tickets at the Jack, the bookstores, and at the door. Really a wonderful event. Don't miss that one either. Kari and the Wrist Rockets are going to be over at Mandy's at the Breakwater. This is the old Breakwater, new Mandy's, I don't know what you want to call it. But anyway, Kari and the Wrist Rockets at 9:30 p.m. on Friday. Sean McColl and his Juno Jug Buskers are at the Alaskan Hotel and Bar on Friday night at 10 p.m. On Saturday, we have the Reindeer Band live at Nugget Mall starting at 1:30 in the afternoon. So while you're out there doing your shopping and whatnot, be entertained by that. The Arts for Youth has their Celebration 2011 Winter Showcase at Thunder Mountain High School at 2 and at 6 p.m. on Saturday. It's a really interesting thing and exciting thing happening over at the Jack on Saturday at 2:30. It is a dance groups gathering. Just bring your drums, come down. There are going to be artists there, all sorts of booths, whatnot. It's free. It's going to run from 2:30 till about 5:30, I think, at the Jack. At 7:30 out at Chapel by the Lake on Saturday, it is the fourth annual Holiday Pops, the Juno Lyric Opera presents that. It will be on Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Jack. You can get tickets for these in all the usual locations. The Juno International Folk Dancers has a ballroom dance at the Jack on Saturday at 8 p.m. And on Sunday, there's something called the Super Slick Holiday Bazaar, Colette Costa's Christmas concert, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. She gets a prize for the longest name of an event.
She gets a prize for everything she does.
She is the prize-winning Colette Costa. It's at Goldtown Nickelodeon. Tickets are $10 in advance, and you get them at the theater, and then she's going to charge you more if you show up the day of.
But you get a present, too.
Huh?
You get a present, too.
I think that's a secret.
She said
it
on the radio
now.
The other day.
Anyway, it's going to be all sorts of fun. There's going to be visitors. It's a fun family thing. So by all means, bring the whole family and come down 7 p.m. on Sunday. There's a variety of literary events and lectures. You were just talking with the Town Square 49 folks. You got to skitter up to the Rookery right now at 4 o'clock to get your cup of coffee with them. Hank Lentfer, author from Gustavus, will be signing his book, Faith of Cranes, at Hearthside Books out at Nugget Mall this evening at 6:30. Bob Armstrong will be talking about wildlife photography. This is presented by the Juno Audubon Society at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall this evening at 7. On Monday, the Governor Sean Parnell, who just returned from a trade mission tour of the Middle East, I think, and Europe, we'll be talking to the Juno World Affairs Council on Monday at noon. It's a brown bag lunch. Come to the Jack with your lunch and listen to the governor talk about his tour. Also on Monday, the book The White House of the North, which is about the governor's house, will be there's going to be a signing of that at Hearthside Books at noon on Monday.
It's a beautiful book.
You have to decide between the current governor or history about governors, I guess, at noon on Monday. Moon, Facts and Folly at the Marie Drake Planetarium. That's at 6:30 on Tuesday. That's free and open to the – it's a good thing for the whole family. Over at the Sukkot Shalom, Torah in the Tongass. Is Judaism the same thing as Christianity, sort of? You can learn about that. 7 p.m. on Tuesday. You can call 463-4333 for more information. Got some great films this week. Goldtown Nickelodeon is showing Take Shelter. They have a 7 p.m. tonight, Friday night and Saturday, and 4 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. On Friday, they're showing Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale. It's a sort of a grim one, as I understand it. It's at 9:30 p.m. on Friday, so if you're feeling grinchy, that would be the one to go to, I suppose. They have their kids' matinees on Sunday at 2. Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Also, that on Monday they'll be showing Unbreakable, the Western States 100. And let's see, workshops and classes. Great opportunity up at the City Museum. They're making holiday crackers. You know those little things that you put by the dinner plate and it explodes? I love those. You can make your own. $5 a cracker. It's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. or until all the supplies run out on Saturday up at the City Museum. Call 586-3572 for more information.
Also, they did this last week, and they still have some supplies left over. So
you better hurry up, because they're lots of fun. Fiber Art with Amy O'Neill Hauk is at the Canvas if you want to make some Christmas gifts. That's 6:30 on Monday. So the U.S. Annual Pottery Sale, we're talking about special events and whatnot now, is out at the University of Alaska Southeast Campus on Friday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Great opportunity to get some great pottery and support the UAS Art Department. The 5th Annual First Lego League Juno Robot Jamboree. I'm sure you've talked to Rebecca about this.
You bet, just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, so that's on Saturday at Centennial Hall. It's free. She said the best time for the public to come is from 1 to 3. So it's if you're interested at all in this, call JEDC for more information or stop over to Centennial Hall on Saturday. Also out at the Airport Shopping Mall, it's the second Saturday. Homespun Mercantile sponsors this or organizes it. Yakus will be there with a bake sale and some gift items that they have made. That starts at 10 a.m. on Saturday. And while you're out there, the Women of the Moose are having a second annual Arts and Crafts Fair at the Moose Lodge. Gingerbread Magic, UAS, Friends of the UAS Alumni, that's out at UAS from 10:30 to noon. You can get your photos with Santa. The 38th Annual Senior Citizen Holiday Dinner, and what I realized is this means that there's probably people having dinner who served the first dinner. That's at Elizabeth Peratrovich Hall on Sunday at 4. That's the old A and B Hall. And the very last thing is that the Hit the Jackpot opens on Wednesday. This is the annual fundraiser for the Jack. It's going to run through the 29th of December. Come on down. $5 a round. We're going to be golfing. There's all sorts of interesting holidays going to be celebrated in your miniature golf course. How are we doing on time?
Doing great.
Oh, okay. So we can chat a little bit more about that?
Just a little bit.
Okay. Well, it is, in fact, the miniature golf course as a fundraiser for the Arts and Humanities Council. And I want to say that this year we're really excited. We've got a Barron's Mechanical Building, something pretty exciting, celebrating Alaska Day. We have somebody, Bing Carrillo, is building Valentine's Day. There is somebody building Hawaiian Lei Day. Did you know that was a holiday?
It is now.
We're having one this time. We have Cycle Alaska building Bike to Work Day as a holiday. Somebody said to me, aren't holidays not supposed to be about work? But anyway, also, if you're interested, there's a special going on right now between with the Symphony, us, and Perseverance Theater. If you buy 3 of any of our programs, our tickets to our events, you get 20% off, and we were thinking this is kind of a nice holiday idea for people who may have more stuff in their house than they really want.
Nancy Journey, thank you very much for coming by. If you need more information on these, you can check out their website at www.jahc.org.
Or click on this cute QR. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Nancy.
See ya.
Coming up tonight on the Focus on Community. It's not Focus on Community, it's the Alaska Identity Project. Andrea Lopez will be talking to comedian Jeff Kirsch. She'll also be talking to Nils Andreasen about the Institute of the North. It is just about 4 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait here, KTUO on K210AS 89.9. Also live online at www.ktuo.org. Tomorrow, 3 on a June afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. We'll get the details on pre-engineering courses at the University of Alaska Southeast with guest of Assistant Professor of Engineering Larry Sawa. We'll also hear a Sitka version of The Night Before Christmas from Will Swagel of Sitka. And local guitarist Dan Hobson will be here to talk about his new CD, Solo Classical Guitar. At Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for Friday looks like rain in the morning, becoming showers in the afternoon. Forecast for Friday night, cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow. A slight chance of rain expected on Saturday. And looks like for Sunday, the forecast is rain likely. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you very much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today, and have a pleasant evening.